The Millennial Express, plowing ever onward through a northern winter. From station to station, bringing the dissident right to you.
Welcome back to Millennial 2023, and I'm now here with Ban the BBC. Would you like to, I can't remember if I was, if you're anonymous or not.
My name's Corey.
Right, okay. Corey from the Ban the BBC. So Corey, welcome, and would you like to introduce yourself and your and Ban the BBC, the Twitter profile, to the audience?
Sure. My name's Corey. I'm run the Twitter feed, Ban the BBC. This is my debut for a live stream, so I don't think I've put myself out prior to this. I've been running that feed now for quite a while, since 2012. And coming from Australia originally, they don't have a TV license. So I came here in the late 90s and was confronted with this thing, you've got to have a license to watch TV, and it just sounded so ridiculous at the time. And in fact, I did comply, just right, okay, sounds like it's a tax and you've just got to pay it, and that was the end of that. And so I never really thought much about the BBC or anything. It was just the TV, because back then technology isn't what it is now, where you've got high bandwidth internet and you can stream anything you want now. So back then, definitely, you still had to have a satellite.
And everyone had a TV then. I mean, I think still now most people probably have a TV, at least of a certain age, for sure. I don't have a TV. I haven't had one for about 5 years. And I think that's increasingly widespread now. But yeah, sure, back in the late 90s, everyone had a TV. But
and the big, thick ones, the big, fat tube ones.
Yeah, cathode ray tube. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. What I would ask you is, coming from Australia, is there anything equivalent? Because isn't there
ABC.
Yeah. So isn't there an equivalent of the BBC there? Can you talk about that, just so that we know the situation?
Yep. So there is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. It takes the same kind of lettering terminology. It's a sister organisation of the BBC back in its roots. It will have looked to the BBC as from the motherland, and taken its direction from that. It is a state broadcaster, but it's funded from general taxation. It is a lot smaller than the BBC. It doesn't have the budget of the BBC, and I'm by no means actually an expert at all on the ABC. It is held in as much derision, I think, as the BBC here. It leans left. It puts pretty much the same kind of let's say propaganda, state and sort of social engineering propaganda. So they all take their lead from each other, is another curiosity of these organizations.
And isn't there the in Canada the CBC as well? I think it's the same situation.
But I don't know how they fund it. So the TV license is this peculiarity to Britain it's been around forever. It's since, I think, the 1930s I've researched it. And it did have kind of when TV was an emerging technology, so not many people had them. They were black and white. They were very, very large. They were very, very expensive, and very few people had them. Radio was something that was far more accessible. So TV was this new technology, and to fund it, the government said, well, it's going to need government funding to build the transmitter network, so we'll have a license, and that will be how it's funded, and that the BBC would maintain the transmitter network, and that actually support the infrastructure. But these myths of how the television infrastructure has been funded is now come to an end, that actually is run by a private company now. The BBC is just a client of a company called Arqiva. Arqiva is a radio technology company, and they run the old television infrastructure, which is now digital. It's been upgraded. But they still run that network on a commercial basis. So the BBC's role as maintaining the infrastructure is still a myth. And you'll still see people on Twitter say, but the TV license pays for the transmitter network. You know, it's not just the BBC, but it really hasn't been true for a very long time. So the reasons for having some kind of a licensing mechanism to fund infrastructure is really, truly gone now. We've got the internet. It's far more sophisticated and far more capable than the old one-way transmission network.
And we've had it for 30 years.
Yeah.
It's not like last Thursday. This is a strange lag. But again, I think it's to do with generations. I think a lot of people just are accustomed to having the TV in the corner of the living room or even the corner of every room in the house. And so it's a constant companion. It's a mainstay of everyday life. And so they don't, it takes a long time for them to adapt. And there's no desire for it. It's still, why would they get rid of it kind of thing?
Well, they don't. And all the government's own research that they do, all their own, even Ofcom, is very clear in the stats. So I've actually got a couple of screenshots of it. I don't know if it's worth sharing it or not. But I have dug them out. And it does show that the older the people, that they're all the viewership is declining, but it's the old people that are the most watching of TV because that's what they're used to. Like, you know, my dad's in another generation. He's 80-odd. He can't really use this kind of technology. He struggles, like, opening up a Skype call, and he understands TV. You turn it on, you've got something very simple, and that's his experience. So it's that generation. So the younger generation definitely are switching off from the BBC, and all of the linear broadcasts, because there is a tax attached to it, and that tax says the BBC commands all over all of the live network. So if you watch any kind of live TV that's broadcast on this terrestrial network, that falls within this taxation that the BBC has. And then it is a tax, and that's another myth. They say it's not a tax. It is a tax. It's been classified by the government as a tax.
There's a special legal term for it. It's a type of tax, but I can't remember what it is now. But yeah, the terminology you apply to it doesn't really matter. In the end, it's still something that you're forced to have if you have a TV.
It is quite a nuanced thing. It's a tax on watching live TV, and it is very specific. But in effect, the way people treat as if you have a TV, but that's not actually right, because you can watch this live stream is not being broadcast on normal TV. So there would be no requirement to have a TV license to watch this live stream, because it's, even if it's live, it's not being broadcast on normal TV, so you don't have to have a UK TV license. It has to be something that's, say, shown on GB News.
It's something on the traditional terrestrial TV network.
That's right, yeah. But the crucial thing is that it attaches a criminal sanction. So that's what makes it, in my view, a tax. See, if it's just a case of a subscription, you get it, and if you don't want it, you cancel it, and then you don't get it anymore, that's absolutely fine. I couldn't care less what the BBC does and says, really. But it is this particular thing that it is this legal requirement that has scope beyond the BBC that makes you or attempts to compel you to pay it. Now, I don't pay it. And it's an easily defeatable tax. And I haven't watched the BBC or live TV, and I'm perfectly happy for over a decade. And I've got all my information, better information than from the mainstream media through alternative networks. And it's far superior. And I believe I'm better informed than these state organizations. And they're all, of course, controlled by Ofcom. So Ofcom acts as a kind of a watchdog on the content. So you'll see GB News, for example, is getting into trouble all the time with Ofcom. And it's that regulatory framework that controls it. Yeah.
And it's clear that the stalwarts of the traditional system see Ofcom as a tool to be used to thwart newcomers like GB News. They're quite open about that, or at least they have been on occasion. That Ofcom is there, at least partly, to make sure that the status quo continues, and newcomers are limited. But what I would ask you, coming from Australia, what was the reputation of the BBC in Australia? I mean, I think around the world, different people, I mean, within Britain, there's a contingent of the population who just adore the BBC and will sing the praises of it and are insisting that it's the best thing in the media service in the world and all that, and great value for money because it's so cheap. And they're convinced that everyone else loves it. Everyone else is envious of the BBC. Is that true? What would you say?
I don't think the BBC really had the penetration that it's claimed. I mean, but see, I left Australia in the late 90s, so I don't really know what the external perception of the BBC is. But at the time, it never really factored for something. We had the ABC. We had another one called SBS, which is the foreign. And it's quite hilarious because it had some just crazy foreign films on it. But it was all publicly funded. And it's all just, and you all just get it for free. And while they don't have ads, the other commercial channels, Channel 9, Channel 7 from memory, they were funded by advertising on a commercial basis. And really no one ever gave TV as a technology and as an issue to fund it a second thought. It was actually abolished in the early 70s. They had a TV license in Australia, but they abolished it. And they just fund the ABC out of general taxation. But its budget is far smaller. Its scope is far smaller. And of course, Australia is very isolated. So it has a bit of a navel-gazing type of mentality that it only really looks into itself. That the idea of the SBS was it was more outward-looking, but, you know, Australia is kind of its own little backwater.
I wouldn't say that.
I'm denigrating of it, believe me. I'm not a fan of Australia. The way they behaved in COVID
That was something else. That was
it
terrible.
Was shocking. I was
police
shocked.
State stuff. Yeah.
It was a proper police state.
Same with Canada as well, oddly, and New Zealand. So it's weird Anglosphere thing.
It is. But what I thought was better about Britain is that, and I'll call myself British now, we got out on the streets in very, very large numbers. And the police, I noticed, and it was illegal to be out at that time, they were scared. They were literally standing back. There were so many people. And that's one of the things that the BBC said, thousands of people on the streets. There were tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. It is just obvious lying.
Yeah, and this is something where when people, you get middle-class people, you know, educated people who sing the praises of the BBC, and one of the things they'll say is, it's the best reporting. It's impartial. It's like they believe that. They believe the BBC's own hype about itself. And once you're outside of that, you know, once you become even slightly red-pilled, you start watching the BBC and you're just in awe at how much that's not the truth. I mean, it is definitely conveying a particular worldview with everything.
And a mistake a lot of people seem to make is it Tory? You get the left saying it's the Tory BBC. It's ludicrous. But equally, I don't think it's ideologically Labour either. It has its own worldview. It's a metropolitan, liberal left, rich, but pro-establishment ideology. It has we believe in the British state, but we must impose this very peculiar social engineering on the population to make them accept and normalize multiculturalism and diversity and all of these things. Now, some of these things I might actually agree with, but I don't agree with the way it's being forced on the public. And I have a particular problem with it. And I certainly don't like the fact that they go and attack people through this TV license through quite aggressive tactics to get people to pay up. But it is, if you have a little bit of research and you actually understand the limitations, the legal limitations of what TV licensing can and can't do, and it's something the BBC complains about because they say people are now awake to the limitations of TV licensing and aren't paying.
Well, yeah, I saw something like they lost 700,000.
Yeah, yes. I mean, that's, yeah, one of the things is that, yeah, there's about, you see, there's a way to say, you can formally say, I don't want the BBC. And that's numbering. There's 2.8 million people that formally file this thing every 2 years to say, no, I don't watch the BBC, I don't watch live TV. And you don't actually legally have to do that. And I don't do that. You just get the stupid letters and you put them in the shredder, throw them in the bin. So they have the people that are saying that they don't pay for it at 2.8 million. Plus, there's another 400,000 at least, probably up to a million now, that just aren't, just ignoring the letters, putting them in the bin. The phone rings and it's not someone, they're not expecting Deliveroo or Amazon Prime. They don't answer the door. And that's the end of that.
Yeah, that's the other thing. People have all sorts of misconceptions about this, that you have to let them in, for example.
No.
And it's just not true.
No, I was just going to say that the one of the things is that 70% of the people they prosecute are women. And this is their own statistics pointing this out. It's because women tend to be agreeable. And I say, oh, yes, I didn't pay it, or whatever. They'll just admit it. And then they get prosecuted. So they're the easy target. It's single women typically. So it's disproportionate. It's a system which is disproportionately targeting a particular group. It really is quite an insidious thing. And I don't even think myself the BBC is that good at its propaganda. Its own statistics show that people aren't really tuning in. It's still the biggest, but it's only of that dwindling audience that's still watching TV.
Oh, so the government's, I think once the older generations die out, I mean, I hate to say that, it sounds horrible, and I don't want them to die and all that, of course.
No.
But once they do pass, I think I think television as a medium is probably gone. And I do think the BBC is going to have to transform out of recognition almost in order to survive that.
Yeah, I just don't see it. It's because I've totally embraced internet communications that it's an irrelevancy. All the BBC is to me, it's the best entertainment for a license fee I don't pay. It is hilarious, the stuff that comes out. I don't watch the BBC, but this feed that I run, Ban the BBC, it just people send me stuff. They say, have a look at this, Ban the BBC. Look at what they've done. They've got a black Sir Isaac Newton. It's laughable.
I haven't watched Doctor Who since the
end. Rubbish. You've seen one, you've seen them all. And I'm going to offend all the Doctor Who fans, and I've had a few Doctor Who fans on the feed.
I don't have many Doctor Who.
No,
I used to like Doctor Who a long time, very long time ago, but very few of my fans are into it.
But what they're dirty on is they're wokeifying Doctor Who, so that now it's a black lesbian, the Doctor Who. And it's even I've watched maybe one Doctor Who in Australia on Channel 2. And it's just, you've seen one, you've seen them all. But this wokeification, this revisionism that the BBC is engaging in, I just don't know what they're trying to do with it.
That's a good question. I really don't know either. But one thing that's said is that among the establishment, there just is no vision left. And so all they've got is wokery.
Yeah, so that's possible.
They're just going for broke, as it were.
Yes, it's like they don't care. It's like put a black we don't care anymore. And even in that kind of artistic license, I wouldn't have an objection with that, except that they will never cast a black person with a white actor. That it's not consistent, this thing.
No, not at all.
So it's always one way with this stuff. And this is a concern that I've got, that they are putting people off acceptance by pushing it. And And but like you say, I think it's they've got nothing left in the armory. They what is it that makes Britain great now that you can believe in as a society? There's the common law, but that can be eroded by Parliament. So the thing, everything seems to be slowly eroding, and the BBC is just kind of a symptom that's caught up with it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that a problem here is that there is no sort of agreed upon culture anymore.
No,
we used to have that. It was pretty much a homogenous monocultural society, excepting gypsies, whatever. But we are meant to celebrate that it's not that anymore. But that causes all sorts of problems. And one of them is, as you say, that the BBC is now pushing a worldview that actually doesn't appeal to a lot of the population anymore.
It doesn't.
They don't identify with it. And they'll freely moan about that. They always just see white middle-class people. I've got no place there, etc. Well, this is what the BBC have been celebrating all along is now biting them.
I think so. I think it's obvious. I can prove this in so many ways. The best thing is their own Twitter feed. There was a one where that guy, that green trans guy that had a wig and he's running for in Bromsgrove or wherever it was.
I can't remember his name, but I know the one you mean, yeah.
We know the one. And the BBC just got absolutely ratioed on Twitter, and they had to turn off the replies. And it wasn't like they'd had a couple of people that were saying, oh, no, it's all right, that's really good. All of them. We could even switch and have a look at it. But it proves that at least I think on Twitter there's a different network of people that have departed from the state-controlled media and are looking for something different and looking for their own answers and their own truth. And when the BBC shows up there, it looks ridiculous. Yeah. It all sounds good down in Islington coffee shop. This all sounds great. We'll do this, right? But when you actually bring it out into the light, people say, this is ridiculous. See, I say you can be whoever you want to be, but make it, I guess, believable. And I think this is where the problem, I think, is coming into it.
I think also they're just, as you say, they're pushing it too hard. So people start reacting. It's offensive.
Yeah.
They're corroding any sort of social norms and replacing them with new bizarro world social norms that people aren't comfortable with. I mean, I have to say, I'm actually not opposed to the idea of I'm a collectivist in many ways. I don't mind the idea of a national culture and a national health service, for example. I wouldn't mind if it worked. And even at, like the Royal Mail, Post Office, I find this kind of cute and traditional and reassuring. But the thing is that in this age, all of this stuff becomes onerous and soulless because it's headed by some managerial guy who doesn't care. And you can tell that there's no sort of connection with the ordinary people anymore. And of course there's so much corruption, but with the case of the BBC, I mean, the thing is, if it actually did do, if it took risks, if it made experimental drama, experimental documentaries, offbeat stuff that wouldn't survive in the commercial realm, that it's not that much of a tax on the ordinary person. So why not use that money to fund something that's actually useful and beneficial to people in general?
I understand that, but
the BBC doesn't do that. It makes bullshit.
Well, it's frightened. And despite the fact that it claims to be independent of government, it is absolutely beholden to government because its whole funding structure is an act of the Westminster Parliament. The politicians effectively control its existence. So they have to be pro-establishment. They have to be pro the ruling party to a degree. So they are in effect obliged. And when they say they're independent, it's a trick, because what they all know what they have to do without actually being told. So we're acting independently. We actually know what we're supposed to do. And that's not to go against the government of the day and to push the line. That's why they were so monstrous with COVID. If the BBC had actually said, hang on, should we even be locking down? Should we be challenging the science? Should we be actually saying to the government, listen, is this serious? Because you've actually built two hospitals out there. There's one person in there and they've been checked out already. What's going on? Asking some pretty obvious questions. We all worked this out. I even gave the government a benefit of the doubt initially with COVID for about a month. But I worked out pretty quickly that it wasn't adding up. And even the government's own, the chief medical officer, he did that Chatham House thing, and he said, well, it's really just a cold, and actually only a tiny number of people who are really sick with something else anyway are going to die. And he was right. And yet this madness continued for three years.
It was incredible. And awesome. I mean, I've talked about it extensively. I've written a huge Substack essay about it that I haven't published because it's so depressing. I mean, it's like 6,000 words, and I don't know if I want to impose it on people. But there is so much to be said about COVID, and we can transition to talking about that if you want.
Sure.
Because there is so much to it. But as a segue, it's worth saying that, the BBC, 20 years ago, a debate, an issue, a current issue, you'd have it on Newsnight or whatever, some BBC
that question
program,
time thing.
And there would be different experts, like two different experts, who actually disagreed, like quite fundamentally, on the issue. And they would be pitted against each other with the host moderating. That's what it would be in order to get a fair debate, a fair appraisal of the subject. And what they did with COVID and what they do basically with everything nowadays is they have two experts who fundamentally agree. Their disagreement is, should we go to power level 5 or power level 7?
Yes.
And then they'll debate that. So it's not, should we be in lockdown at all? No. It's, should the lockdown be level 5 or level 7?
Correct. It's a completely rigged discussion. And we are having that discussion. Now, we weren't allowed to have that discussion on the old Twitter before Elon took over. You said anything about the vaccines. We had to say, look, there's another one that's died of climate change. We had to talk in code. Because the moment you said, hey, this could be the vaccine, bam, that the sensor hammer, and it was permanent ban, you're off, never coming back on Twitter again. And if we find your IP address again, we're going to ban that second account of yours too. They were really aggressive, and it was being run, as well as we now know from the leaks, from the Twitter stuff when Elon took over, Twitter files, that the government was up to their necks in banning even little people with just 100 followers. They'd want them completely banned and directing Twitter to do this. So
it's astonishing.
It is frightening, and I am still struggling to understand why they tried to do it. Maybe it was just a test that they're saying, can we actually control our populations like this? Do we still have this control over them? I think they were sensing that they were losing that control. But in doing this, they've actually woken up a lot more people. And I don't know that they could pull something else off quite like that again. I'd like to hope that they couldn't.
Yeah, I think the whole thing rested on scaring the shit out of the public at the beginning.
It did.
And that was with those Chinese videos where...
Exactly, yeah.
Kind of absurd things like people shaking on the ground, dying.
And there's people running out in the white suits. It was all
hazmat.
And
once COVID actually arrived in the West, nothing like that happened. This stuff, God knows what the origin of those videos was, but maybe the Chinese state was being deliberately over heavy-handed. I don't know.
Yeah,
either way, they were grossly misleading, and that primed the public. That made them think, holy shit. This is a very, very dangerous disease.
I was worried. I'll be honest with you. I haven't always said that I knew it was a joke from the start. I didn't. I actually went out, did some research, and bought some very expensive FFP3 masks, the proper ones with the proper seals, paid a couple hundred quid for them. I thought, I'll have them on hand, thanks, because they just all disappeared off the shelves. And you had to get them on eBay and pay over the odds for them, because I just didn't know what we were dealing with. And the way the government's reacting, well, you know, they must have better information than us. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm not a total conspiracy theorist. I never, ever went down that path. But it became, as time went on, that it was clearly not what they made it out to be. And then the propaganda started in earnest, and they were really just making absolute lies up. And the key one was the positive test. So people would have a positive test, and they'd also die, and they'd say another COVID death. But even only just recently in the COVID inquiry, they've been starting to call BS on that, because it was obvious that unless did they, I was even saying on Twitter, and I've got my tweets to prove it, did they actually die with a respiratory related complication from this virus, yes or no? And actually, the number of people that they actually classified as doing that were tiny, minuscule. And then most of the people had some other comorbidity. It was something else. So people, I was even told in primary school, people die of a cold. And you say, as a kid,
what? People in, yeah, when we were at primary school, no one expected to live to 85. That was that was unusual. I mean, most people died in their 70s, definitely around 80, let's say. And, 75. I think that was the norm back then. And so it's not unusual for people of 85 to get the cold or get the flu and just die. And I don't like it, but it's just the truth.
And there was a certain madness that, and it's a bit of a touchy thing to speak about, but if we can stop that one person from dying, we must lock the whole world down. You must stay at home so that granny doesn't catch this thing and die. And so there was this whole thing that, you know, we've all got to stay inside to stop this from happening, stop this thing from spreading, which it didn't stop it. It just delayed it.
That's the other thing, just to add another layer to the absurdity. It didn't actually stop the spread. I mean, I guess it's conceivable that it slowed the spread, but I think even that's doubtful, because by the time by that time, the disease was everywhere anyway. There are so many different facets. Another thing is that by the time the mask mandate started, the whole thing was basically over. Certainly the initial wave was over, and yet then they stepped up the requirements.
They had to double down. They were back. They painted themselves into a corner. They couldn't just come out and say, actually, we got this wrong. We have overestimated the risk that this thing poses. Stand down, everyone. Just forget about it. They were backed in a corner. They'd invested so much. They probably had the Bill Gates organization breathing down their necks, and then you can start to bring in a bit of conspiracy theory, because the idea that Boris Johnson came up with this stuff to lock down is ludicrous. That man's not capable. There is or was certainly something directing worldwide operations. It didn't just happen in Britain. It happened all over the Western world, and of course in China. So it's a period of complete madness that once you'd woken up from the spell, which happened, most of the people on my feed were awake to this within about a month at the most, and we're just, what the hell's going on? So that's when the protests started, and then you start seeing the BBC. They just didn't question it. They never really went into bat.
But also, it didn't occur to them that, well, why is the BLM protest okay, but the anti-COVID protest is a super spreader event?
Yeah.
Journalists just seem to forget their duty to question things. Amazing.
Well, it's a really valid point, because I was on some of those protesters, and they put out the whole the cops with the baton, the territorial support people. So they were there for the white middle class non-compliant protesters, but the BLM, they were allowed. That was like this. The BBC had their mostly peaceful riots tweet. That I shame I didn't look it up for this, but they had one because they had mostly peaceful riots in Minnesota. It's but this stuff in trying to push this agenda, it is so ridiculous that they are undermining anything they're trying to achieve. So there'll always be the people that believe this stuff, but I think now the BBC is lost to a very large part of the population now, that they just simply do not believe it. They regard it as complete propaganda. It's totally dismissed and ignored. And now they bring out that whole Ministry of Truth thing that the BBC Verify.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah.
But see, this is another. But see, that's died a death now, because they've ridiculed themselves as well. Like one of the guys was fact checking memes, and just it's a meme, it's a joke, and yes, it contains a grain of truth with some stuff that's inaccurate, but it's a joke. And I think that once they parodied themselves to that point, that's why I just think it's black entertainment with the BBC now. I don't see the government getting rid of it, but I don't see that it's doing the job for the government that the government thinks that justifies monstering the public with this license fee. I think cut it down to size. If you must have it, you know, it can be vastly reduced in size, and but the whole character of it with it pushing this agenda, it's a counterproductive agenda. It's turning people off because it's just so ridiculous. Yeah. I don't know what you feel about it. I mean,
As I said, I've got affection for the BBC in the past. I think it was once, it did make good dramas in the past, a long time ago. Like I'm talking about the 60s and 70s and 80s. Well,
Yes Minister is a
kind exactly.
of, yeah,
exactly.
that kind of thing, yeah.
Good dramas, good sitcoms, good documentaries, but that's a different era altogether.
I mean,
I don't really rate anything they've done since, the 90s, and even the 90s. The 90s was a step down from the 80s.
I don't know what happened with them. They lost their nerve, perhaps. It's not something that's preoccupied. Again, as I said to you, that I guess where I'm coming from is, why should we be forced to pay for it anyway? Let's say it's the best comedy there is, but why is everyone forced to pay for that?
Yeah.
That's a bit ridiculous, right?
I know. I do understand that, and I sympathise with that argument. I mean, as I say, I've got sympathy and affection for the idea of a national institution that's taxpayer funded. Fine, we disagree on that, but the thing is, I do agree anyway that we should abolish the BBC because the whole thing has just gone wrong. It's gone rotten.
Yeah, and I guess that's where you and I have got common cause with it, is I guess I am truly coming from the point of view that we shouldn't be forced to pay for this one particular TV station. It is, as far as I'm concerned, no different to ITV or any of the rest
in many ways, and no better.
I agree.
And the other thing is that, as I said, they don't do experimental stuff. They don't push the envelope. They don't make nice things. It's highly commercial stuff.
Yeah. Well, they farm it out. Right? Yeah. They get it subcontractors.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. So there isn't it, that does away with the other justification for it, which is that it makes material that the commercial sector wouldn't make. That simply is not true anymore, I don't think. I mean, there's a whole plethora of arguments here. Like the fact that the BBC is so big and unwieldy and a massive bureaucracy. God knows how many staff they have that really are needed. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it's like the NHS or Twitter prior to Musk, where it's massively overstaffed.
Well, I think the BBC even recognise this because they made that series W1A. I don't know if you heard about that. Yes, so it was a parody on the BBC itself, and back when I was involved, what paying for it. I think I watched one episode of it. I think it's when the iPlayer, you can still watch catch up without a license. I watched one episode and it's in a silly, there's a silly situation where they came into a BBC meeting and this new person had just come in. You know, the internet's going to kill you guys. It's all going. Everything's gone. You're stuffed. You've had it. And it's the BBC know. Some people in the BBC know this stuff, but they're just given this big pile of money. I think they just do whatever. They know there's no accountability for what they actually put out. They probably don't care anymore. They're just going for broke. And that's it. You know, when the music stops, they'll stop, you know, or they'll have to get their own money. Of course, if they went out to free subscription, they wouldn't get any. The people just really, by and large, don't like it.
That's an argument that's often said is that, well, if it's so popular, then the people who love it can pay for it themselves voluntarily. I wonder about that. That I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up going that way, because as I say, I think the moral argument for the BBC and for the license fee,
this way
especially, is it just doesn't work in this era. I don't think it's. I think it was a relic. Has been a relic for a long time.
Yeah,
but especially in the age of internet and streaming, it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah,
could
you imagine the BBC even having this type of conversation or the type of conversations you're having? There's not a cat's hell in chance.
No,
of the people that you're talking to would ever get, you know, within 5 foot of the BBC. It's a controlled thing that has all of the relics of the old establishment still there, but they don't do things anymore. They don't. It doesn't work like that. I mean, it's losing the people that are paying for it, and that's the end of it, as far as I'm concerned. It's only a matter of time. We're just watching the train crash in slow motion.
It's agree. Right? It is basically an inevitability. As I say, it's either going to. It's just a matter of how it happens. If it survives, it will only be by transforming into something very different and much more lean, much more streamlined than it is just now. And certainly they wouldn't be. You know, I remember when they sold off the television center. And that I think that's Broadcasting House behind you, which is their original building.
That's down the road from me, yeah.
yeah. And then they built Television Centre in the early 60s, which was a purpose-designed building for TV production. And then they got rid of that about 10 years ago and moved up to Manchester, to Media City. And that must have cost unimaginable millions to make this transition, which was completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
And they said at the time, well, we're doing it because the BBC is too London-centric. It's now too Manchester-centric.
But this is big government thinking. This is what they're doing by that is they're redistributing wealth. So they are relocating it up there. They are obviously the people are being paid their fiat money from the taxpayers, and they're spending it up there. You know, buying their lattes up there rather than down in White City. So the government is effectively mandating these moves. Like they have Companies House in Cardiff. Well, it could be a server in Whitehall somewhere. It doesn't have to be in Cardiff, but it makes jobs, right? So part of the British economy is fake. I mean, I don't even want to talk about the Australian one. All of Western countries have this part of their economy which is just being made by government expenditure. You know, it's kind of why I'm a fiscal libertarian, fiscal conservative, if you like. I'm a social liberal, but I'm a fiscal conservative. The government needs to be really trimmed out, and the BBC is just a symptom of this big government problem that we've got. But see, you might like big government. Maybe big government can mandate a different social structure or something. But they're trying to do that with this other thing, this woke thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm for a general free state, free living, liberal sort of attitude. But I don't like the wokery, I don't like the multiculturalism, no. And all of that, and overbearing. So no, absolutely not. Because then you've got a huge machine that is pumping this stuff out all the time.
The mistake I think they're making is the multicultural part of this is a complete failure. The idea that, you know, you have a whole bunch of people come from another country. So I suppose you could accuse me of this, because I've come to this country and said, well, I don't like your TV license, so I'm going to fight against it.
But yeah, Boston, Australia is similar.
Get back to where you came from.
Coming over here, taking our TV licenses.
Exactly. But by and large, I integrate here. I'm a part of British society in many different ways. And I'm not trying to say that the way that Brits do things, the ordinary Brits doing this, is the wrong thing. You know, but there are people that say, well, no, you must adopt my religion as well. You must bow down to the East or whatever. And this is the problem. That is the actual problem, the idea that the multicultural thing works. I think you have to build a culture that's consistent, that it's a set of values that people... Perhaps this is the argument that I think you have with Sargon of Akkad, I don't know. I'm not even really sure what that's about, but I kind of... I'm quite persuaded by this, that we agree on a common set of values that we all subscribe to, and it kind of doesn't matter what your skin colour is and that sort of thing. I'm kind of quite persuaded by that, but I do know the values of some cultures are not equal to ours. That is one thing I am certain of, and I've seen enormous evidence to prove that. They're just the behavior and the standards and certain things that we have. Perhaps there are things certainly that we have that they profoundly disagree with, and there are quite a few.
Well, I just saw that Muslims have been complaining about art. I saw that today. A teacher showed artwork that had the naked human form in it, and that's resulted in some sort of controversy. When once upon a time that would have been nothing. That's a complicated issue that you've broached there. It's probably outside the scope of this conversation.
That's fine. Yeah.
Culture is quite a deep thing, and I don't think it's just values or principles that you can name. I think it's something very organic and nebulous, and that it emerges from a people, and then they hold on to it. It means something to them.
I'd certainly agree with that. Do you think it's possible that someone who isn't of that genetic pool can still adopt that value system without actually having that genetic association?
I think there are always individuals. There are always exceptions. Mm. It's a matter of numbers. Once there are sufficient numbers, there isn't a need for them to integrate in that way.
No.
Even if they wanted to.
Mm.
So that's the problem with mass immigration.
See, so, I think this is the problem that Britain now faces, this is a dangerous topic. I appreciate that. But there are lots of people coming in that do not have the values that were here, at least. And so the state's reaction and the BBC's reaction, well, let's make all this okay. Let's say that these cultures are just as good as ours, and that we'll push an agenda that tries to normalize this, right? And we know it doesn't work. We can see the evidence that it's not working.
Yeah.
And it's a fantasy.
It is. And also, I just don't think that people are actually that interested in other cultures. I mean, there are always people who are, of course, who are fascinated and will study some other culture.
Mm.
But most people, the extent of their interest in other cultures is the food. You know, I can go to a Lebanese restaurant.
Yeah, I heard what you said about that. So, but you can get the recipes, you don't need people.
Exactly. But they don't actually know anything about other cultures. So,
yes, that's not really about their culture.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the human condition to... I think most people are actually very... They're normies, you know, that most people are quite... They just want to know what the situation is in their area,
yeah,
and they'll care about their local area, they'll care about the local community, and that's really it.
so this is where I believe it is going wrong, because you've got intellectuals from the universities that have these high ideas, and they think this is what's good for white man, van guy, right? This great thing that I have that he can. Have this other culture be side by side, it'll all be perfect, and it sounds great at university, and it'll get you a first on your thesis, but it's not reality.
And no, the intellectual projects his own curiosity, his own fondness for abstract ideas onto the everyman, and imagines that those. But it's not the same thing, because it's one thing to be fond of abstract ideas and to learn about a different culture. It's another thing to have that other culture right in front of you every day. And
yes.
And yet you feel it has nothing to do with you.
Yes.
So it takes what was an academic's whim and interest in something, curiosity, and it makes it into the everyman's everyday burden.
And
that's a completely different thing. And I think the academic failed to see that in advance.
That's exactly right. And I think the other thing is the people making these decisions, for example, in Westminster, many of them are very rich. They do not live with the consequences of their decisions in any way. They are completely isolated from it. Even COVID, look, you've got Boris Johnson having parties, doing whatever. Right? They did not take this seriously. It's evident. That they didn't take their own what they were saying seriously. They knew they themselves obviously had the best data, had the best advice, and they just said, well, okay, we're just going to have to go along with this because whoever is telling them to do this, which is another discussion, we've just got to, get on with it and joke the public off, and with devastating consequences, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, there are people, and this is the thing, it comes back to these very tangible things like an old woman dying. She would like to have cuddled her grandchild one last time, but it can't happen. Now, that sounds like a tear-jerking, smallest violin in the world kind of thing.
It's not.
But it's actually real. It happens to many, many people.
Yes, it's abhorrent what happened. Yeah. And I will never forgive them for what they did with that. It has forced me back into my libertarian values, where I'd originally sort of started this journey with the band, the BBC, and I was sort of, just before we came on, I was sort of filling you in a bit on that. It's sort of that idea that the government is really more I believe there should be a government. I believe there needs to be a framework and an impartial umpire that upholds the law of the land. But it's now encroaching on everything. It's encroaching financially. The taxes have never been higher. They want to control everybody and everything. There's mass surveillance, and then they can't even control the borders properly.
I mean, it's a dystopia.
It is a dystopia. It's a with nice restaurants and high end retail. It's a complete dystopian hellscape.
Yeah,
but I think it's funny too. I think you've got to look at the funny side of some of it. That's what I do try to do with my feed a bit, is point out how stupid and ridiculous and funny some of this stuff that the government does, and the BBC do it too. And they're just getting laughed at. I've never laughed so much as on this Twitter. It's hilarious. It's just one thing after another. And I don't even go and seek it out. People send me stuff and they say, hey, look at this, tag me into something. And it's just some craziness
I don't know where it's good to have a Twitter. This is what social media is for, really. It's for... what's the word? Creating a hub for something, for activities. Mm. Everyone knows where to go to report that thing, and everyone knows where to go to see it reported. Mm. A conduit. That's the word, a conduit.
It is. As long as it now, what do you think? What's your feeling on with Elon Musk now? It's great that he brought you back, because we were following each other well before, I think, you got banned, because you were banned for about quite a while.
Oh, yeah. I was banned in September 2018. A long time ago, yeah. So when I got it back, it had been 4.5 years, I think.
That is mad. How did you even remember your email that you used or your password or anything?
I've always had the same, well, yeah, basically always the same email address. So the password, I think my cookies, I don't know. I actually don't know. Maybe
right.
I have to reset the password. I can't remember. I do remember it was kind of weird because there was something that had... Oh, yeah, I had to uninstall the app from my phone because it just wouldn't update. It wouldn't accept that I was now unbanned. I had to uninstall and reinstall it.
Yeah.
And I did have to use the authenticator in order to get back in. I mean, it was weird. It was kind of like opening up an ancient tomb.
Yes.
You know, there were things you had to do.
It's like you were frozen in time. It was your feeds. It still had the 20,000. It's got more now, but it had the 20,000 followers you had. I somehow survived it. But
I was going to ask, did you ever have any trouble with the regime on Twitter?
On and off. I was always on there, you know, erring on being banned. I had a few, not of the permanent suspension, but the threats of it. Like, if you do this one more time, we're permanently suspending you. So you felt like,
The gun's always against your head.
It got in your head. It really did. It actually meant I was self-censoring and frightened to say things in a certain way. And in the end, you just thought, this isn't fun anymore. Twitter was fun initially, and then the censorship got worse and worse and worse. So people can say what they like. I was very critical of Elon Musk, but I'm so happy with... Yeah, I see the results of what he's done. He's brought you back. He's brought Alex Jones back. You don't have to listen to any of us. You can block us. There's plenty of people block me. So they don't have to listen to me.
Exactly.
They don't like
exactly.
The tools are there.
Yeah. The argument about harassment or safety, you know, people should be safe online. They can be safe online. They just have to block someone who's bothering them. That's all there is to it. That argument,
you don't have to reply. Yeah.
So, I mean, I block people all the time who annoy me and who offend me.
There's no shame in that.
Every day. So, but no one, there's no government trying to protect me legally by banning people from social media.
I think they're coming for us, mate. They are definitely gonna, you know, it's like, okay, we know who this bloke is now. We know, you know, I just think it'd be so weak for them. I think it's showing all the time they're showing their weakness with this, you know, that they've had control of the message through the BBC, through the legacy media for as long as they've been around. And they've lost this power now. And so they're letting the great unwashed like us talk now. We're able to talk to each other. And
I think that if the powers that be had known what the internet would lead to, I don't think they would have allowed it to happen.
No.
I think the internet was a mistake in that sense. It happened by accident.
Yes. It's the, and I was talking to my partner about this as well, that we're trying to remember, when did broadband become sufficiently fast for it to start affecting TV? It was quite a while ago that you had broadband, but it wasn't really, it's still very slow. Now it's really...
Yeah. My memory of this is a broadband first started coming around about 2002. YouTube, I think, was about 2006 or 5.
That sounds about right.
Wasn't really a big thing until a couple of years later.
Now, and do you remember?
And by 2010, I think it was, you know, it was pretty damn.
It's pretty fast. See, this is the beginning of the end. So 2012, that's when I started my band. It became... obvious that the TV was now a dying tech, but you wouldn't know dial-up modems then.
Did you remember those?
See, this it's only an age thing. I have CB radios.
Yeah, that was. But well, actually, my father had one of those in his car for his work.
Yep.
So I did. I remember it. It was a box nailed to a board. Yeah. It was under the chair. Yeah. Yes, it had a thing you'd talk into. I don't think it had an... I don't know. It must have had some sort of antenna.
We'll have 27 megs. They were quite long.
Yeah, I think it was always there in my childhood. But then the dial-up modem, you know, we were on this ridiculous arrangement where there was a separate internet deal for 9 to 5, and then 5 p.m. we'd switch to a different thing.
I remember that. Yeah.
It was kind of ridiculous. And then broadband came, and it was all the time, and it didn't. A telephone call wouldn't hang up the internet anymore. Mm. And it was faster, and it was just great. That was a huge, it really simplified it. But the speeds then steadily increased.
Yeah, and I think this is where it's now the end of... So the BBC is going to have to modify its mugging laws to shake us down for cash. They have a broadband tax or something just to keep them going. But the justification for it, I don't see it.
People would do it. I don't think people would go along with that.
Mm.
I think there would be a lot of pissed off people.
Mm.
Even if the government were, I mean, I can imagine a Labour government bringing that in.
Sure, they would.
Without a doubt. I can imagine big protests about that, because it's just obviously silly. It's unjust. You can't say that the internet, in order to use broadband, you've got to pay for the BBC.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Or how about in order to use the internet, you've got to pay for my Coca-Cola?
Exactly. You know, it is a tax on a toaster to pay for typewriter maintenance. It's just a strange thing, and it was shocking to me, coming as I did from Australia in the late 90s. But I did comply with it for a while, but it started to grate, and it was around the time of the Jimmy Savile scandal. I said, to come off it, this is not on. You know, you've hidden this thing, and yet this organization survives. News of the World, I think, if you know, they had a scandal, they were gone, right? So really, if it was a commercial organization, it'd be sued out of existence by now. But because it's a government-backed thing, it survives. And I don't think it's doing the government's job particularly well anyway. But, you know, we're in a bubble here too. We're completely lost to them as far as they're concerned.
Yeah. There's always still that contingent of people I mentioned at the start who really think the BBC is tremendous.
Yeah. Well, there's some people like that Strictly Dancing thing. They think that's great. I don't. It's not my thing.
Again, that's not the kind of thing. I mean, you know, to inform, educate, and entertain. But really, I mean, Strictly Dancing, is that, what the hell? We should be aiming for a much higher than that. And I would say the same in other genres, like, you know, drama and all this. They're just pumping out garbage, really.
And revising the history with ludicrous injections of swapped out colored people. It's just stupid.
Yes.
And fine, they're hastening their own demise as far as I'm concerned. And I'm just here to loan them a shovel. They're doing the work. They're doing it for themselves. I'm doing nothing. I haven't really.
You're just documenting the decline.
I should say documenting the decline of the BBC. It's just stupid. It's a stupid thing that I set up in 2012, because I saw the YouTube videos of people being raided by the police. Well, not by the police, but by the, you know, all, and that kind of got, you know. But these people were freemen of the land type people that were making a stand, and they thought, you know, that it requires consent. And they have a clever argument with that. The unfortunate thing is it doesn't work down at the magistrates' court when they finally get there. But it does make a damn good YouTube video. But I did sympathize with their views. I can kind of see, but your best thing is you tear up the letters and you don't have any contact with them, and that's the end of it. And that's the way people – and I think – I'd like to see more people just cancel the TV license. Let's just keep the pressure up on them. And, you know, okay, it might force the government to make some other less avoidable funding arrangement, but at least we've forced the issue. You know, if my feed stands for anything like that, you know, and I've had a lot of people who were following me who said, you know, I still pay it because my wife likes this show or something. And then you hear about it later and they say, finally, she's realized how bad this thing is and we're canceling. So, indeed. You know, I never judge people if they paid for it for an easy life.
No, I mean, some people just don't want the risk that the TV license people can actually, you know, break down your front door while you're busy on broadband.
Good luck with that.
I understand that. People don't want unnecessary and unknown risks, of course. There's a question here from Aethelward. As a 1997-born Zoomer, I was raised on David Attenborough documentaries, when most kids my age were raised on Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network and so on. It's a great shame how far the BBC has fallen from wholesome national British culture like the Antiques Roadshow, Great British Bake Off, to just shoehorning diversity and so on.
He's right. He's totally right. He's nailed it. I'd have less wind under my sails if people were genuinely liking it. That'd be the end of this feed that I run here. They'd be saying, "Get back to Australia, you, and get out of our country. Go back to where you came from." And I wouldn't be offended. But they don't. It is as that chap said, it's exactly right that they lost it.
I'm the same. You know, as I said, I've got a lot of affection for the BBC of eras past, and even in my own childhood, it was still pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. It's what it is now, and for what it has been for the last 20, 30 years. It's awful. So even if there are two arguments. It's A, I don't like the idea of the compulsion, the coercion of the public. If they're not using it themselves, I just don't think it can really be justified given the technology of today. But secondly, more importantly for me, the thing is not good for people. It's not good for Britain. It's not good for us.
No.
So we shouldn't be. It shouldn't exist, really.
I think there's no other choice, and I do actually share that view that it's. I don't even necessarily think it deserves a shot at privatization. I really think the assets. I have a very extreme view about the assets should be to sell the cameras and the lighting equipment. I might even buy a bit of it off eBay, right? Yeah. And we'll make our own videos and movies and stuff, you know, from their kit, but. Honestly, I don't think it deserves a shot at privatization. I don't think it would actually work that well. I think there is a separate company, the BBC Worldwide thing, that markets the 1% of things that are actually any good, and then the rest of it is that they use license fee payers' money on that isn't any good. That's just wasted. So. It's a kind of a good thing. You're given all this taxpayers' money. You can find one show that's good. Like Little Britain, they would never do that again.
Oh no.
No,
definitely.
But that was
not.
Hilarious. I found that quite hilarious. But it's probably not, it's still probably not that good though. And they knew when to stop. So if I find it hilarious, I think they're in trouble.
Well, they are in trouble nowadays.
They are.
But yeah. Maximum Gibbs says, "'Tis better to gibs than receives." MC, Merry Christmas, everyone. Thank you,
Merry Maximum. Christmas.
That's very kind. And then there are a few super chats elsewhere. How pervasive is Rupert Murdoch's presence in Australia?
Ooh.
Or is it mostly the US and UK, which is where his media empire is primarily situated?
Yeah, a lot of people are really worried about Rupert Murdoch, but I think he's a dinosaur still. It's like he's the old media oligarch. I mean, we had Kerry Packer in Australia. It was Kerry Packer and Rupert Murdoch were the two big media moguls, And they were generally perceived to have enormous power because through their media, through their newspapers, they could pretty much dictate governments. But what? How are they doing that now? We've got our own communication medium, Twitter. We've got our own way of communicating. I don't think they've got the same influence that they once did. People are very worried about Murdoch, but I've never read a Murdoch paper or done anything with any of his media output for ages.
Yeah. I always forget whether he owns Fox News, 20th Fox. Century Fox, or is that spun off?
Yeah, it's complicated. I don't know.
I don't know either. But he's primarily known for newspapers. And in fact, wasn't News of the World one of his?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
I'm feeling it was.
But they're all in terminal decline now too, aren't they? They're just absolutely. The masthead.
Yeah, again, it's the same thing as with the BBC. The circulation is just going down by the month.
I used to like a newspaper. See, I'm old enough to know that, and I kind of miss that in a way. But I've embraced the new technology, and I have to filter my own news now. I have to be my own journalist and use my experience and my knowledge to.
Yeah, it's just occurred to me. I don't think I've ever. I've never had a newspaper, like a regular newspaper. I don't know if I think I've only bought a newspaper on a special occasion.
Oh, I used to have them every day, but at a certain point I stopped it. There's no point.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same. It's like sometimes there's an easy transition to make. Like when I got rid of my TV, it really just happened kind of by the by. I didn't even think about it. And then eventually I realized years later, I've not had a TV for years. It was a strange realization.
Yeah. Do you not think it's quite interesting that the fact that we've got rid of the TV, that now our way of analyzing political situations or things like COVID, because we don't have the BBC in our front room telling us, oh, you must believe this, that actually we're free of that kind of thinking? I don't know.
Definitely. Yeah? I think that to have it, I can't imagine what it would have been like. I do think maybe I would have been much, because it would have held me back. It would have kept bringing me back to the plantation and the illusion that it's maintaining all the time.
Yeah.
Because they're constantly pumping out the fear and the numbers and all this. So you can't take a step back and take a broader view or take on alternative views. You're constantly being brought back to their view on it. So I imagine that would have really slowed down my realization or my conclusion that COVID was all a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we were slowed down because of Twitter One, that Twitter One was there was censorship in place there, pernicious stuff, that we couldn't really talk about this stuff. Or we'd get suspended, and that's just disgusting what happened. Yeah. So I think under Elon Musk, do you think now with Twitter, with the way it is now, do you think they'll be able to pull off something like this again? And I don't think they could. I think they're going to go for Elon Musk too.
Yeah, that's. I think he is probably going to or is coalescing into a very genuine threat to all sorts of vested. Previously comfy powers. So yeah, I think they're going to, it'll probably be lawfare. They'll try to sue him into oblivion, I guess.
Yeah.
Or it'll be something more, quick that they'll do. I don't know.
Yeah. We've got to keep an eye on Trump because he's they've definitely gone for him. It's
exactly. He's constantly tied up with legal cases.
But I mean, that's third world stuff. That's third world stuff, isn't it? They imprison and prosecute your enemy, your political enemies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Find this some irregularity and just screw them for it. That's how the establishment can do things because it can afford to do things like that.
Yeah.
It's got the resources to just put a team of lawyers onto it, analyze.
And you've got to defend yourself. You're on the back foot.
The dirt that you need.
Even if it's not true. And you can get to court and prove it, but it's cost you millions.
Yes.
It's a dangerous thing to be at that level. you know, and facing down these people that, you know, I look at that and think, there's no way I'll be a politician. I just have no interest in it at all.
I think you'd have to be some type of sociopath to and survive at that level in that kind of environment, or you know, autistic as hell or something, in order to be insulated from it. I think a normal person would feel emotionally just besieged by that kind of thing, by that kind of environment.
Yeah, you've got to be able to tell a lie and have absolutely no moral scruples about the implications of what you've done. It's like,
yeah, but even if you're not lying, like even if you're in the right, I think the pressure of it would destroy an ordinary person. That's what I mean.
Well, I think there's that aspect. I don't think anyone who gets there is normal. Look at Tony Blair. Look at these people. They are just weird, strange creatures. Yeah,
exactly. I can't imagine Tony Blair like being a guy in a pub, like just having a drink or something like that. There's something husk-like and artificial, hollow about him. And I think it's the same for many politicians.
It's another debate. And, you know, how the theory of government and the whole thing.
I think people seek power. I mean, and sometimes it can be for benign reasons, but usually it's someone who seeks power. I don't like saying it because there will be people who seek power because they genuinely want to make the world a better place and they realize they have charisma, they've got energy, so they'll go for it. But I think most people who seek power do so because they're sort of enamored of it and in love with it and don't really have scruples. And so that's what they go for.
That seems to be the pattern, but it's a pattern that... That's what leads me certainly to believe at this point that, you know, the people that are presented to us as the leaders are not really the ones calling the shots. How can we have swapped so many prime ministers in that period and, you know, things just keep trundling on? They're front men. They're fulfilling their ego, their place in history. But they're front men for these interests. And the machinery of the UK state will just continue on and on until
I mean, you can't say that there is a Cameron's Britain or a Boris's Britain or God forbid, a Liz Truss's Britain or a Rishi Sunak's Britain, and that we've lived through these different eras. Over the last 10 years, not at all. It's been a continuous, smooth...
Monotonous. Yeah. It's the same thing. So it's the civil service, I always say, it's the civil service that effectively are running things. And it's the machinery of the state remains in place during elections. It's not like they all resign on the eve of an election and they get rehired for their jobs. They're still there. You know, so the taxes still get collected. The police still do their job, you see. It's not. It's a tick in the box to placate the plebs.
Exactly. And this is what Yes Minister was all about, that the civil service is really in charge of everything. And the democratic politicians, even then, 40 years ago, were really just front men and clowns.
And being humoured by a very manipulative, clever civil servant who was actually running things.
Yeah.
But in such a way as to hoodwink the egomaniacs that he was encumbered with to... placate the plebs to think they have a choice. Yeah. But this is that's the BBC doing a good job through comedy, but with kind of, you know, just look at this and think about this more. There's actually, that's something that I admire.
Yes, it was actually a really good program. I got the box set for Christmas about 10 years ago now. And I watched the first season isn't that good. They were warming up. And then there was a pilot, I think, in 1980. But then the first season, and then it gets much better. The second and third and I think fourth seasons are really hilarious. I'd recommend Yes Minister to people, anyone who's not seen that, especially younger people, because it really shows you how good we used to be at TV and comedy. Mm. As they might not be familiar with that. The BB, Ian says the BBC needs its Elon Musk moment. That's yes. I don't know what form that would take, but certainly I do agree. Yeah, it would be good if some massively wealthy person who had his heart in the right place came along and really shook it up. That would be good.
Mm.
Black Pigeon Pilled asks, what do you think of Disease X, and is this something the powers that be, the powers that shouldn't be, have in the pipeline for the near future? Disease X.
I have heard about this. I can't speak anything credible about it. I guess where I'm coming from now is I am now so suspicious of anything like that that my immediate reaction now is to certainly disbelieve it. If it's coming from an official source, I'd be highly skeptical. You know, I want to be walking over dead bodies with bleeding eyes like in the movie Outbreak before I'm going to believe anything that they say ever again. And if I don't see that, I don't believe it. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. It's corroded trust. You would now want a lot more evidence, not some grainy videos from China. You'd want some bloody good evidence that things are serious, that things are, this disease is genuinely a threat. Because, and this is probably for a lot of people, I've wondered about this quite a lot. You alluded to it earlier. Could they do COVID again? I think they could, but there would have to be a novel twist. There'd have to be it'd have to be a bit different, you know, like a sequel to a film. But you can't just repeat the same old formula. It's got to be a bit different in order to take people unawares and baffle them, bamboozle them all over again. I think another coronavirus with more masks and PCR tests. If they try,
well, you see them try to bring it back.
Well, that, I think, again, there's a section of the population who want it. I think they actually, it's not that they fall for it. It's that they want it to be true, because in some sense, they were happiest.
Yeah.
I don't understand this, but there are people who I think they felt that life was meaningful when, you know, there's a cliche.
It was simpler. It was simpler for them.
And there was a struggle. There was something that they could do in order to be good. And so there are people
taking the vaccine is like a sacrament.
Yeah, exactly. And there are people who say that the Blitz was actually kind of enjoyable in the sense that life was dangerous. And so things mattered, and it was exciting and meaningful. And what you did mattered. You could, it gave you opportunities to be good or bad. And of course, everyone was good. And so I think there are people who genuinely miss the tedium and misery of 2020, because at least life was meaningful then. At least there was a big bloody threat. And that in turn explains why climate change is something that a certain percentage of the population literally want to believe. That the world is ending.
It does bring them together.
They're going to do these things to stop it from ending.
Yes, you see them on the throwing themselves in front of cars and things. I don't understand that mentality. I don't have that mentality, and I can't adopt that mindset. So I'm clearly not a socialist, because I don't have this collective. This need for a collective thinking. And I think this is what makes me think of the world the way I do. And I can be objective, and I'm not owned by anybody. So there's no one that says you'll follow this party. I have no party line. So I can look at these things objectively, form my own opinion. But some people need this collective idea. And for some reason, I don't have it. It's not that I don't relate to people, but I just don't have this. I identify with the language I speak and the people that I'm from originally, but it's this socialist. I think it's all like a socialist idea. But yeah, I mean,
conservatives in a previous era would have, like Tolkien, for example, or C.S. Lewis, were very concerned with the social body. I think it's it used to be possible for someone to be a conservative, not believe in a welfare state or whatever, high taxation, but still to believe in the collective as an entity, as a group. Because it clearly is a group. I mean, the British people do exist, the English people do exist, the Australian people do exist. So
yes,
I don't think it's a contradiction. And I think this is part of the a trick that's been played over the last 80 years or so, that the right has to be blind to a group identity. And you see it now with modern right-wingers and neocons and like that. It's all about a social contract, and you either sign the line, sign the dotted line, or you don't. It used to be far more organic than that. So I don't think it automatically means that you're a communist or something if you believe in a collective. That's my point.
I'll have to meditate on that one for a bit and see where I go.
Well, put it this way: I'm not a communist, and I didn't, you know, believe in the whole COVID thing. You know, I am a collectivist, but I was against the collective there, and that does show the dangers of collectivism. But it also shows, I mean, see, COVID is another one of these big things that transects all these different things. The left fell for it, the right fell for it, the private entities fell for it, the public entities fell for it. That's partly why it's so scary, because it's everywhere. It was all of society. I mean, remember the churches even falling for it. They were preaching about
Catholic one. Most notably, Boglio, whatever his name is, the current Pope, he's totally went COVID crazy. I quite like that Pope. But
It's scary because it makes you think, well, there's nowhere that's apolitical. There's nowhere that's free of the doctrine. It's a scary thing.
We've got to build, I think maybe we've just got to build our own. You've got to build your own culture.
Yeah.
And that's what we're faced with. You to wait for this entity, another entity, to actually do it. It's not going to happen, I don't think. They've made their
stake in the ground. Yeah, I mean, they've colonized.
And it's in danger of disintegrating. Yeah. And I think that's the frightening thing. And I guess I've got to be honest to say that if things got so bad in this country, I would have to leave. See, I sense things were going wrong in Australia like 2 decades ago. I didn't like the authoritarianism. I didn't like the way. And look what's happened.
Yeah.
They went totally overboard. Yeah. And so I am glad I left. And I can honestly say that.
Yeah, I'm also
and I would not go back.
No. Yeah. The stuff that came out of Melbourne especially. Or was it
shocking.
Yeah. Victoria, the whole state of Victoria just seemed to be crazy.
They were mad. And the guy running it, who's now left, Dan Andrews, I think his name was, just insane. The stuff he was saying was shocking.
Yeah.
And,
I remember. I remember him, like, cut several clips of him, like, life's going to be bad for you if you don't
get that. Yeah. Will it, mate? Because, you know. I'm not taking any of that.
But it was the same with Jacinda in New Zealand. She's gone as well. You know, there's another one who's just they did their bit and now they've pissed off probably to some six-figure salary somewhere.
Yeah, and there's something weird about that, isn't there?
Yeah. And she said she came out with the most awful. I think she was actually the worst for.
She is shocking. I think I'd put Canada at the top of the worst. Justin Trudeau, shocking. He shut his people down, cancelled bank accounts, did all sorts of really pernicious, nasty, vindictive stuff to people who just did not want to take this experimental medical product, which is what it was, which does not work, incidentally, at all, and causes enormous like side effects, which are only now starting to come to light. right? And they were perfectly justified in their positions. I put him at the top. Jacinda Ardern next. New Zealand was really bad. And then Australia. And I think Britain is actually, of them all, didn't behave well, but behaved better than the colonies.
I agree. Right. I mean, I think it would have been worse without Boris. I do think that Boris Johnson probably kept the edge off it to some extent.
To some extent, but he also buckled under it all.
Oh, yeah.
And he had the right instinct initially, it appeared, but then he completely buckled. And then he went the other way and started really pushing stuff, you know, like the compulsory vaccinations for the care workers and things like that. And I have a very good friend here and is working for the NHS, and they were threatening him with the sack. And I said, do not take this. You've been the one telling me the dangers of it. And they were going to sack him, you know, and it's shocking to me. He's my best friend online. And I said, I'm going to do something. We'll set up a business. We'll do something. You can come and, you know, work for me. We'll do something. We'll, you know, don't take this thing. But it just turned out the government backed down. I wrote letters to my MP for all the good that that does. And they just send you back this standard crap, which is just a complete waste of time. Yeah. So I'm glad they backed down. And I'm glad he had the strength to stand up to these bullies.
You know, I'm glad he didn't cave. That's good.
But he was close. He said, I'm just going to have to take it because it's my livelihood.
Yeah.
It's shocking. That is shocking.
It's terrible. Terrible.
That's Nuremberg level crime.
I mean, they said that no one was forced, you know, but well.
Yes, they were.
as good as.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's another question. Someone said, did either of you know of Mrs. Brown's Boys on the BBC? And is that quintessential boomerism? I've seen the images from it. I've never actually watched it. It does not look like my kind of thing. No, it's a guy like drag queen sort of stuff, pantomime dean kind of thing. It's not my sort of stuff.
No, I'm not into that either. It's not my thing. Yeah, it's, dressing up as a woman, I just don't do it. Honestly, I don't. It's not my thing. I don't understand it. It's not to say that somebody doesn't get off on that, right? But that's their thing. It's not my thing.
Yeah,
and that's how it goes, you see. And it's,
I'm
the libertarian your mum warned you about.
yeah. Exactly. Well, look, let's call an end to it there because I've got the next stream coming up in 15 minutes. So I'll have to get ready for that. But this has been great. So, Corey, thank you for appearing on Millennial 2023.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I really enjoyed it, Colin. Thank you very much.
Excellent.
And Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you. And I'll be back in about 15 minutes for the next one. Okay. Bye-bye for now.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The journey must continue, but it needs your help. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, and other cryptocurrencies are all very welcome. Find the info at millennial.com/crypto and make your donation. All aboard. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the journey and spread the word.